What's good, everybody, and welcome to Body Bag Podcast. I'm Chris Thomas, and with me, as always, Broke Rider Dave.
How we doing, everybody?
The 2020s.
Yeah, Chris, yeah. Talk to me.
Yeah, oh, damn it. Off the top of my head, I forgot the other one that we were mentioning. I couldn't incorporate it into the intro. 2020s, I haven't really done a lot of movie watching of 2020s horror movies. The 2020s horror movies, really. Or at least not in the theater.
Yeah, I haven't really gone to the theater much for 2020 horrors either. Most of the movies I've seen that have come out in the 2020s have been for this podcast. Always watching other movies for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't always have time to go back and visit, you know, some of these other movies. So,
we're doing another Versus episode. This one is either going to solidify my win or we're going to go on for another one. And was this one of mine? You gave me like two.
Yeah, this was one of yours. Yours was the remakes, the last one, and then 2020s. Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought, you know, we've done some newer movies, but 2020s, I think our wheelhouse is usually from like 1983 to like early 2000s.
Yeah, that's kind of like our main zone of like the horror that we grew up on and enjoy.
Yeah. Now, we've been doing a good fair amount of, like, doing throwbacks to the classics, and we have done some newer ones, but, you know, the menu Shudder comes out with a lot of Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah. Oh, God, that was such a good movie.
Now, I had not seen either of these. I had only heard about them.
Yeah, I saw Abigail before this.
It seems like the last couple of times I've kind of asked, hey, can we talk about this one first? But I'm going to leave this one up to you. Do you have a preference? Which one do you want us to get kicked off with first?
We could start off with Abigail.
You want to start off with Abigail? Okay. Abigail is was your pick.
Yeah, just a quick synopsis of it.
Mm.
You got a group of criminals kidnap a 12-year-old ballerina named Abigail.
Yep.
They intending to hold her for a $50 million ransom.
Sounds like a solid plan.
But they find out that Abigail is no ordinary 12-year-old. She is the daughter of a infamous crime boss.
Lazar. She might as well be Kaiser Soze's daughter.
Yeah. And they panic, and then they also find out a neat little fact about Abigail.
What's that?
She is, in fact, a vampire. And then it becomes a survival movie where she turns tables on them and starts killing them, and there's a fight for survival. And that is the basic synopsis of this movie.
That's the bare bones. I gotta say, I think they really kicked themselves in the nuts by spoiling that big twist in the trailer.
Yeah, but, yeah, I see that. But without, you know, the premise being that, you know, these people kidnapped a vampire,
mm-hmm.
The trailers would look like just a regular crime drama.
Yeah, but I think
it would have less people going to see it, yeah.
And I get that, but at the same time, like, as I was watching this movie, by the 40-45, this is about, like, an hour, and is this an hour and a half, hour, how long is this
movie? 40-minute long movie.
And by the time it got to be about 40-45 minutes, the big twist hadn't been revealed by that point. I'm like, you know, they're doing a whole lot of building up to something that we already know, you know, the twist of. I don't know. Just me personally, I just think that it would have worked.
It was right there is probably like a miscommunication between like the producers and everyone that worked on the movie and the marketing team.
Yeah, because I say the same thing about Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
I don't know if you went and saw that. Or not Captain America Winter Soldier, Captain America Brave New World.
I haven't seen it yet, no.
You've seen the trailer?
Yeah.
Not so much of a spoiler, but Red Hulk's in it.
Yeah.
Which should have been a big twist.
Yeah.
I just kept that in my mind, but that is not my biggest issue with it.
No.
I'll say this. I love the setup. I love the idea of a group of criminals. They go to kidnap this little girl, and it's like, holy shit, turns out she's a man-eating vampire.
Yeah.
You could do a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. Like, but I love Abigail's journey in this movie.
Abigail is on my list now. She's a good child actor.
She's a great child actor, yeah.
I thought she did very, very well.
But the fact that she goes from, you know, helpless child to antagonist to a protagonist at the end,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was a very interesting character journey for her in this movie.
I'm not entirely sure how I feel. I mean, we're going to drift towards the ultimate conclusion.
Yeah.
But not entirely sure how I feel about that ending. Maybe you can persuade me one way or the other.
Okay.
At some point. But at the beginning, we do have these criminals.
And talk about casting in this movie.
You know what's funny? I wasn't aware of one of the first... The main guy, the main head of the criminal group, the one who's like, the brains behind the little clique of, it was like five people. It took me until about halfway through the movie before I had to stop and go, holy shit, that's Dan Stevens.
Yeah.
And the only thing I know Dan Stevens from is that he plays Matthew in Downton Abbey. You know, Matthew, who died on his way to tell everybody about his newborn son and who would have inherited the Downton Abbey estate.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what, I like the show Downton Abbey, sue me.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard good things.
I'll just say this.
For like the first half of the movie, I thought Dan Stevens was the actor who played Michael Weston from Burn Notice.
Oh, you thought that was...
I forget his name, but yeah, that's who I thought it was at first, because... Jeff Donovan, yeah, they look similar, and they kind of have similar manner in their acting and the way he was talking. Too.
He kind of looks like a mixture of Donovan and Tom Felton, the guy who plays Lucius Malfoy. Draco Malfoy, rather.
Yeah.
But he is the head of this clique who is, we'll get into this, but not the most professional group of mercenaries.
Like, he wasn't like the head of it. Like, he was like the de facto leader, but like they were all hired by one guy who hired each one of them individually.
Yeah,
so they don't know each other. They're not like a
they're not a crew.
Yeah. They're just, you know, freelancing criminals, each having a specific job that they were hired to do.
You know, I gotta say though, they make kidnapping a little girl seem very easy.
Right.
Because they don't know each other, and they don't even know really who they're kidnapping. They're just like, yeah, this is the target. And they're like, well, who is it? Well, I don't know, just this girl. Well, who's her father? I don't know, some guy who's going to pay us $50 million.
Yeah, but each person on the side has something they need to do for this kidnapping, yeah.
Yes. The first 10 minutes, the kidnapping goes well. Little Abigail gets back. She's getting back from a ballet recital. And they drug her, grab her, toss her in the car. Although the main actress, whose name in the movie is Joey, I believe...
Yeah, Melissa Barrera from Scream.
Yes.
These past couple years, I've definitely became a big fan of her. She did a great job in this movie as well.
We'll see.
You like her?
Well, we'll see. She's not totally on board with kidnapping a kid.
Yeah, she's like, this is a kid we're doing this to?
Which, I had to stop and go, so you signed on to do this job, and you just said, okay... yeah, I'll do this job, and you didn't know who you were kidnapping? Like they're in the van as they're talking about, so who are we kidnapping? Who are we doing? And it's like, surely you would have known this before you took the job. Like, I know you need money, but whatever. Okay,
I mean, $50 million, but everyone's like, screw it, yeah.
They kidnap the girl, they bring her back to the hideout, which is this big-ass mansion.
Yeah.
Who is being run by Giancarlo Esposito. Or Gus Fring, as a lot of you Breaking Bad fans will know. And I gotta say, he basically says, all right, you guys, you kidnapped the girl. You guys gotta keep her here for 24 hours until we can secure the money from her father.
Yeah.
And good luck babysitting. See ya. I was like, okay. So.
However, that's kind of weird. So these people you just hired, you're just gonna be like, yeah.
Leave them.
I'm gonna leave.
Leave them in this big mansion.
Yeah.
And then... something happens, which was they store Abigail up in the upstairs bedroom, and they're like, okay, only one of us can talk to her. That way she can't identify all of us. Joey, you're going to be a kind of babysitter on this.
Because her thing is, like, she's kind of like the medic of the group, the caretaker for Abigail.
And then what happens next is I hated this next scene. We get some background on our criminals here by some very forced exposition. I honestly thought this was very lazy exposition.
But I thought it was kind of funny where they're like, okay, don't tell anybody anything. And then they kind of made it like a competition where it's like...
Dude, because Joey is very... At first, I thought Joey was like, oh, they hired her because she's like a detective of some sort. She's super like observant or something like that. But we find out later it's because she's a medic. But they're like, hey, tell me something about myself. Here, here's $100. I bet you can't name something about me. And then she proceeds to list out basically everybody's a baseball card, and she lists out everybody's stats.
I think she does, yeah.
She's like, oh, you, leader of the group, Frank. Frank is the leader, or the, what's his name? Dan Stevens.
Character. Yeah, Dan Stevens. She's like, you're an ex-cop. It's obvious by the way you walk, talk, the gun you use.
And you over there, you used to be a trust fund baby, but you obviously like this for the thrills because you come from money, and you're former muscle from the... Now, granted, bear in mind, she's not done any research about these characters. This is just what she supposedly...
Observed.
And I hated that scene, in all honesty. I was like, wow, you really wanted us to... That's the best way that you could tell us the background on these characters is literally have one character point at each one of them and list out their background.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny because, you know, before this happened, you had Angus Cloud character, this being the last movie filmed before he passed away, and that dude's just like a piece of shit.
Was he the dumbass that was always drinking and high?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was making guesses about everyone, and he was wrong on everything.
This is another reason why I said that this is a very unprofessional crew, because two of them are just getting wasted.
Yeah.
As they're waiting, one of them is just drinking. The other one's drinking and smoking up like 3-4 joints. Yeah. Like throughout the course of like 2 hours. Well, what's her face? Joey did say that, yeah, you're good, but you're not professional. Damn straight, he's not professional. He's lighting up like 4 blunts and drank an entire decanter of whiskey. But we get a background on a bunch of the characters. 25 minutes in, I'm starting to feel bad for Dave because this shit's making me cringe.
I had fun watching this movie, so... We had two different experiences here.
We had two different experiences, but I did not hate this movie because there were things that sprinkled in it that I absolutely loved. And I will bring them up. Like I already said, Abigail is by far, I'm giving her flowers. Yeah. The actress who plays Abigail, she does a very good job. All right, so the other thing that was making me cringe was that we see all these characters, and of all these characters, we're supposed to feel... some kind of sympathy for Joey character.
Yeah.
The one who's hesitant about this whole thing to begin with. And I'm like, you know, no. I do not feel bad for you, because even once you found out that this was a kid, you still kidnapped her.
Yeah.
You still held her down and drugged her and brought her here. You're not going to make me feel... throughout the movie, you see her on her phone, and you see that she's also a mother, because she's like, there's pictures of her and her son. I'm like, you're not doing this to me, movie. you're not making me feel bad for this person. She's still a kidnapper.
Right.
But, oh, and during the little interaction with Abigail, when she's sitting there talking, she's like, will you pinky promise me that you're not? I was like, ugh, get it out of my face with that pinky promise. Like,
it's a 12-year-old girl, Chris. Come on.
I don't care, man. I just... It was the forced way that I was like, you really want me to feel sympathy towards Joey. Like,
I didn't take it as I thought it's just her building a bond with this 12-year-old that she's forced to be the caretaker for this day, just trying to get through.
I just between the exposition and that interaction with her, I don't know. It just felt very forced to me. I personally was just like, ugh. However, I also kept this in mind. The movie Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Very, very generic first, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
A very generic setup of a cabin in the woods. These are very stock characters. In my mind, I'm like, all right, if this turns out to be like, all right, we just need this to set the ground and then we'll have fun. Then I was like, okay, I will give that the benefit of the doubt. I'll let it cook. I'll let it at least get to the point where we find out that she's a vampire.
Yeah.
Okay, so... And then this is when we find out through a discussion with Abigail and Joey that she is the daughter of this infamous crime boss named Lazar.
Well, she doesn't find that out. She's like, I'm just sorry for what's going to happen to you guys. Kind of makes it like a vague threat to Joey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when she goes downstairs to Dan Stevens, like, Frank, She's like, whose daughter is this?
Yeah, that's why. Now that we kidnapped this girl, whose daughter is this?
Like, how much trouble is this going to cause us? And she's kind of spooked, which causes Frank to freak out. And he goes up there, puts Abigail at gunpoint, and just asks her, who's like, who is your dad?
That part did make me laugh.
Yeah.
Because he goes upstairs, doesn't know that she's been unblindfolded, walks in, and it's like, fuck! And, and she sees his face. That made me laugh. That got a genuine laugh out of me. And he basically threatens her and says, whose daughter are you? And she's like, Lazar. Christoph Lazar, I think his
name is. Christoph Lazar. And so Frank just kind of leaves the room and he starts getting all his stuff. He's like, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. Peace out. I don't need this shit. But, you know, maybe I should have found out before I kidnapped this girl that she was the daughter of a famous crime lord.
Yeah.
But he gets basically talked into saying, hey, look, we're already here. $7 million, which would have been everybody's cut. That's a lot of money. And we're already here. Do you trust the guy who set this all up? Giancarlo Esposito's character. His name is Lambert. And
he's Lambert. He's like, yeah. And plus, like, you can't really leave. She's already seen your face.
Yeah, she's already seen your face, and because Joey, if they ever catch up with Frank, they'll torture him and probably get him to reveal everything.
Yeah.
So, all right, so I guess we're sticking around. This is also my other thought, or this is what would have been going through my mind, because we get to see some of this mansion. Mansion is pretty big and pretty, I don't know, for some reason it made me think of 13 Ghosts, that mansion. It's right? Just,
yeah.
There's nooks and crannies. A gigantic fucking mansion, and my thoughts were, damn, look at the size of this thing. Wait, if our employer can afford this big-ass mansion, why is he having us kidnap kids?
Right.
This dude's obviously wealthy.
But I like how they played that into the movie, on how they like showed us this big-ass mansion. Because Frank was freaked out about, you know, being Christoph Lazar's daughter, they're like, we need to lock this place down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything's gonna come from outside, you watch outside. You make sure all the entrances are locked up, yeah.
Alright, so at this point, they're like, alright, we just need to keep this shit locked down, make sure, you know, just make sure the girl's safe, and everybody kind of, like, goes off to their separate areas of the mansion. We do have another person that we did not mention, and that was their hacker.
Played by Catherine Newton.
Which, it was bugging me where I saw her from. She's the daughter in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
Yeah, also in Lisa Frankenstein, and I think she was in Supernatural as well.
Yes. So, she is kind of like this bubbly, young hacker. She kind of is like Valley Girlish. She's always on her phone. She's the young one of the group.
Yeah.
And three blunt dude has been trying to get into her pants ever since they were kidnapping this girl.
Since she got into the car he was driving, yeah.
Yeah, that dude's just been doing nothing but smoking weed and trying to get in this girl's pants.
Yeah.
And he shows up in her room uninvited, scares her. She's like, get the fuck out of here. He goes off. He goes downstairs into the basement area, and we get our first victim.
Yeah.
We don't see who, even though we saw the trailer. And he gets got. Ass screams, what was that? What's her name, by the way? It's going to bug me. I don't want to keep saying girl from Quantumania. What was her name in the movie? Blonde hair, hacker girl.
What are they calling her? Sammy?
Sammy. Sammy's right. Sammy comes down, sees this decapitated head, freaks out, and everybody comes downstairs, sees this dead body, and is like, oh my god, this is obviously Lazar's guys.
Yeah.
They found us. Yeah, we're so fucked right now. Like I said, it might as well be Kaiser Soze.
Yeah.
For all of my usual suspect friends. So they're like, alright, well, we gotta fuck. Nobody, they're in a shit position.
Now they assume that, like, Lazar's, like, muscle is in the house with them, mm-hmm. called Valdez. They're like, well, Valdez must be here. And they have all these, like, you know, lures, things Valdez has done.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, let's make sure Abigail's still here. And they see she's still there. They're like, okay, well, he has to be in here somewhere. So they go looking for him. And the other person we didn't talk about, he was just kind of like the sniper of the group.
Yes.
They called him Don Rickles.
Yeah, Don Rickles.
Yeah,
everybody, I guess everybody got, like, the name of, like, a comedian or something.
They're all from, like, the Rat Pack.
So the sniper rifle guy, his name is Don Rickles.
Yeah.
Don Rickles and Joey, you can see there's a little bit of a connection between the two. They kind of dig each other.
They're both former military, I think is what it is.
They're both former military, and they're both like, all right, we're obviously, like, probably the most professional here.
Yeah.
I don't trust these cutthroats as far as I can throw them, so let's just have each other's backs. And that alliance lasts all of 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Because Don Rickles gets got. I always find it funny because he gets attacked. Oh, she turns around and just sees him standing there, like, faced away from him. And I always find it funny when people, like, gotten their throat cut or have gotten shot, but they still have enough energy to stand for, like, a minute while the person comes to look at them, and then they have to dramatically fall.
Yeah.
No points against that. I just find it funny in any movie I see.
Exactly. It's just an enjoyable scene sometimes. Gets a chuckle.
It gets a chuckle out of me, because I'm like, all right, well, I know he's dead. How long is he's using all of his muscles to just stand up straight right now? But Don Rickles dies. Joey is like, holy shit. So was it at this point that she goes and talks to Abigail, and Abigail says, yeah, there is a guy named Valdez, and he looks like this, 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 and this, and she basically describes Frank?
Yeah, she's like, well, you know, Frank told me not to tell anybody or he'd hurt me. But yeah. He said he organized this with my dad.
So Joey, she basically tells that to Joey, and there's turmoil.
Yeah.
There's turmoil.
He's just like, you're Valdez. He's like, no, I'm not. What?
Go get Abigail, bring her down here, and we're going to fix this right now. Muscle guy, what's Muscle guy's name?
I don't remember. We'll just call him Quebec. That was
Quebec.
Like, main character thing is he's from Quebec.
All right, so I'm just going to go ahead and say this right now. Frank is the head of the group. Joey is the medic. Don Rickles was the sniper. Quebec is the muscle. Sammy is the hacker.
Yeah.
All right, so from now on, I don't have to say it again.
Donner was the driver.
Yes.
Sniper and driver, both dead now.
Both dead. All right, so Quebec goes up. He's going to rough up Abigail and be like, hey, you know, stop jerking us around. Who's this Valdez guy? What does he look like? They all go upstairs. Because Joey's still not trying to have... She basically promised Abigail, I'm gonna make sure that none of these guys hurt you.
Yeah.
She runs up there. They're all, like, arguing. Guns are pointed at each other. Meanwhile, Abigail is just slipping out of her cuffs.
And you got Sammy going, like, guys.
It's all building up to, oh, shit, what's about to happen? And Abigail, we see Abigail vampire face.
Yeah.
And who just starts beating the shit out of everybody. She's got that vampire strength.
Yeah.
So crew gets their ass kicked, but they manage to get away. They manage to regroup. They lock her in the room and go downstairs and regroup. I'm like, okay. Which I will say I like this part. They don't mince words. They go, this is a fucking vampire.
Yeah.
There was no skepticism. There was like, we all saw that. That's a bad vampire.
Yeah, then you got Quebec, who's the big muscle of the group, just trying to cover his ears, like trying not to hear any of this.
He's like superstitious, I guess.
Yeah, and like, dude, this is what's happening.
Get your shit together.
Yeah.
So they're like, all right, well, we're already living in vampire world here, so what do we know? Garlic, crosses, stake through the heart.
Yeah.
And sunshine.
Yeah. So, like, go carve some, you know, steaks out of pool cues. Sammy, go grab some garlic. And this was the funniest thing in the movie.
That she brought onions.
She's actually like, I got the garlic, and Frank just goes, those are fucking onions.
And at this point, I will also say that I do... Of that group,
yeah,
I like Dan Stevens. I like Dan Stevens as much of an asshole as he is.
He played that character perfectly. Yeah, like
some stuff that he says is passively and just fun. He's just super frustrated the entire night.
Yeah,
and him being frustrated is funny.
Yeah,
so I will say Abigail and Dan Stevens is probably my two. They're probably my two favorite characters of the movie.
Okay. Yeah.
So they get loaded for bear. They go try to get Abigail again. Doesn't work. None of their shit works.
Yeah.
Stakes don't do anything. Crosses don't do anything. She kicks their ass again. Stabs Frank in the fucking leg.
Yeah. Rips off a Quebec's cross and starts stabbing him with it.
Yeah. I mean, not big wounds, but a lot of them.
Yeah. And then when she was on top of Sammy, she didn't do anything but just straight up, just continuously just punch her in the gut. Beat the shit out of her for a couple seconds.
Joey sat this one out, and good for her. And then when they come back to lick their wounds, they're like, okay, well, she has the bright idea. Well, when we knocked her out with this sedative,
it worked.
It worked. So why don't we why don't we try to corner her and do that again? Which, it doesn't make sense to me, because they shot her in the head. Like, I would put those rules out the window, just because, like, tranquilizer works on her, but shooting her in the head doesn't.
Yeah, well, tranquilizer only knocks her out, so.
I can tell you're just bummed out by me just pointing out shit.
All the flaws. You better do this to talk to me, too, okay?
Trust me, I already told you that both of these have very close scores.
Evidently, I was higher on both of them than you then.
I think I just might. Sometimes weeks will hit you differently.
Yeah.
Like, week or two ago, I might have watched this and not been picky, but I was just a picky bastard with these. So just sometimes it catches you on some weird days.
Yeah.
But which is good, though. You know, I'll provide the negativity and you can provide the positivity.
Okay, so let's do this again. And we'll knock her out and then try to get the fuck up out of here.
And it works.
And the process of, you know, giving her a sedative, Sammy gets bit.
And we're in uncharted territory. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, so they lock Abigail in a cage. And then when Abigail wakes up, they're trying to, like, figure it out, like, hey, like, how are we getting out of this situation? And that's when another twist comes up. That Lambert works for Abigail, and she brought them all there to kill him.
To hunt and feed.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Dave. I got something else I gotta say.
Yeah.
You remember me saying how I was annoyed about the forced exposition in the beginning?
Yeah.
We get another one when Abigail is basically...
Yeah, tell us why they're all there.
Where Abigail points at each one of them, basically tells us what we're already told before from Joey's character. Like, oh yeah, former cop who did this, but you arrested so-and-so, and you... Yeah. Hacker girl. I was like, yeah, we know this, though. Joey told us this already.
Yeah, double down and let us know what they did to her family.
So, essentially, Daddy just uses Abigail to kill off all of his rivals and enemies.
Yeah. And then also, at this point, you got Sammy going like, so what's gonna happen to me? You bit me. Am I a vampire now? Like, maybe.
I did like that question. Yeah. She's like, I don't know. I don't know, man. I would have just loved if she really didn't know. Or it's like, yeah. I don't know. Nobody's really survived any time I try to... Usually when I bite people, they die. I'm in uncharted territory.
Or when Abigail first wakes up in the cage and she tries to act like a little girl to Joey. Joey's like, cut the shit.
Yes. You're centuries... We find out she's centuries years old.
Yeah.
And I will agree with you. She does go from sweet and innocent little girl to... like, sophisticated, talking like somebody who you would believe had been around for centuries.
Yeah.
And, yeah, again, flowers to her, because she does it multiple times where she has to play helpless and then go back. Because throughout the movie, she's still manipulating the group. She's still, you know, pretending with some people to know certain things and be innocent and also, like, being more frank with others. You know, she's done this so many times.
Yeah, she is basically just playing with her food at this point.
Yes, and she says as much.
Quebec, Sammy, and Joey all go try to find a way out of this.
Mm-hmm.
They leave Frank to watch Abigail, and he's just like, she's like, hey.
Come on, let's be real here.
Yeah, I'll tell you the way out if you let me out of this cage. And he's like, okay. And she tells him the way out, and then he's like, yeah, I'm not doing that. So she just busts through the cage.
Yeah, so she could have just left at any point.
Yeah, basically the cage to humor them. For a while.
Let them think that they're in control of the situation.
Yeah.
Because at this point, you'd think, all right, well, why don't we just kill the girl? Yeah. Should we have her right here? Let's just drive this stake through her. Yeah, we still got Lazar to contend with, though. Yeah. And he's not going to be none too happy about us still killing Abigail.
So they're running.
And at this point, though, Sun is starting to come up a little bit.
Yeah. And as Abigail's about to kill Frank, Joey... takes a couple boards off window, and that sun causes Abigail's hand to explode. So they run and they're like, okay, well, she's recovering now and waiting for the sun to go down to get us. Let's find a plan to do this.
Yeah, and by the way, should have mentioned this earlier, they can't leave.
Yeah.
House is locked down.
House is locked down like House on a Haunted Hill type lockdown.
Yeah, you ain't going anywhere.
Yeah. So, like, there has to be another exit. We'll find it.
Meanwhile, Sammy's still freaking out, but at this point she can go into the sun. They test it out.
Yeah, I don't think I'm a vampire. Yeah.
Okay. So cool. So they all split up and like, okay, let's try to figure out a way up out of here. And
that leaves Quebec with Sammy when Sammy turns into a vampire when she fully turns.
I think she gets turned into a thrall, is what they are called. Basically, they're a vampire that is controlled by the one that turned them.
Yeah. So, like, a mindless puppet for Abigail. Yeah. Where she kills Quebec, and then she does, like, a ballerina dance, waiting for Joey and Frank to come to her.
And at this point, I will say, I'm going to give it a compliment, Dave. I'll do a quick compliment for it. And the scene where Sammy is starting to lose control and get taken over by Abigail, I like that. Yeah. I thought that was a good visual scene. You could hear her inside Sammy's head, and she's like trying to tell Quebec, run, leave. Yeah. But she can't get the words out, and he's facing away.
Yeah.
And they were bonding. Those two have become kind of tight.
Yeah, kind of like big sister, little sister type bond.
Big brother, little sister type bond, yeah. But that goes out the window. She gets turned. She turns into a full vampire and offs Quebec. Poor Quebec.
Yeah.
What did you think of the random ballerina inserts?
I wasn't sure. I guess it was just kind of like a gimmick. Like, hey, you know, she's a ballerina, so.
Some of it did feel a little weird.
Add much to the story.
No, they play up the ballerina. Well, it starts off, you see her at the recital.
Yeah.
And then we see her dancing at one point when they first catch her.
Yeah.
And it's like every time it's like a ritual she does. Every time she kills somebody, she does a ballerina dance.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it was a little weird.
It's just, I guess, something to add a quirk to Abigail's personality.
I'll let it pass. I'm not docking it anything for that. It's not bad and it wasn't great. It was just, I'm sure it worked for some people.
Yeah. It was one of those things that it was just there.
Yeah. But now that she's full of vampire, she does not survive when she tries to attack Frank and Joey and gets hit with some reflective sunlight.
Yeah.
And
explodes.
Explodes, which I thought was, that was fun. I like that.
That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're a vampire in this universe and the sun hits you, you don't just kind of shrivel, you just explode.
Yeah, you don't burn or anything, you just pop. Yeah.
Alright, so she's down.
And that just leaves Joey and Frank to work together, who have kind of been at each other's necks the entire time.
Yeah, they don't like each other.
They've been butting heads and everything, yeah.
They continue looking throughout the mansion, and then they come across this secret room. And who's in there but Lambert's in there.
Yeah.
Lambert is also a vampire. And he basically says, all right, he incapacitates Joey and basically says to Frank, hey, let me turn you, and then you and me can kill Abigail, and we can kill her father.
And take
I've been over. Yeah, take over. They turned me into a vampire. I've been doing this for a few years, and I want them dead.
Yeah.
So, Frank's like, yeah, fuck it. Yeah, bite me.
Let's go, yeah.
And does, and maybe you could tell me what you think of this. He gets turned into a vampire. Kills Lambert.
Which I get, because it depends on, like, vampire lore.
Mm-hmm.
But in some, you get that when you turn, you get, like, a heightened sense of, like, emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And Lambert being the one who put Frank in this situation, he would have been extremely pissed at him. So I understand the kill there.
Oh, no, I don't. That's not something I'm going to question. I would have, you know, done the same thing. But it's like he just, all of a sudden, now he's just evil now.
Well, he's always been evil.
I don't know if you had to say he's evil.
He was always bad. No, he has power, so.
I don't know. There's a distinct difference between the asshole-y criminal that he was, and then now that he has the stuff, he's like, he kills, what's his face? Lambert.
Yeah.
And now he's gonna try to kill Joey. And he's sitting there saying stuff like, I'm gonna turn you, and then I'm gonna make you kill your son, and I'm gonna make you watch while it happens. I'm like, dude, where is this coming from? Like,
well, I always thought, like, he's always been, like, a bad person, so it wasn't too out of left field for me, because during the kidnapping attempt, like, Abigail stabs him in the hand with a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
He was about to punch this 12-year-old they didn't know was a vampire at the time.
Yeah, but there's a difference between punching a girl who just bit you and you got to knock her out to get out of there. There's a difference between that and, like, I'm going to turn you into a vampire, make you kill your own son, and I'm going to have you watch it. And then I'm going to kill you. I mean, it's
kind of built up and shown, like, the levels of evil he was going to. Like, putting a gun to her head to figure out who her father was. It's never been shown he was a good guy, but now that he's a vampire, now he has more power than he's ever had. He's now completely in control of this situation.
Okay, that's fair enough. Alright, so now he's evil.
Yeah. Now he is the antagonist in the story.
And through a reluctant team-up, Abigail and Joey double team his ass. And they manage to get him. They get him. Although, this is where that pinky thing came up.
Came back, yeah.
Because Dan, Steve, and Frankie, he's sitting there about to kill Abigail. He's got her on the ropes. And Abigail's like reaching out to her. She's like, and then holds out her pinky. When I saw that, I said, oh, fuck off. That pinky. Seriously? That pinky promise thing from earlier, really? Like, that's supposed to mean something to me? Because
at this point, like, I was like, you can't do that. Try to make us see Abigail as a little girl again.
No.
Yeah.
You done killed almost everybody here.
Yeah.
And have been trying to kill me. So I'll tell you where you can stick that pinky. So.
But also in the struggle, Frank turns Joey and tries to get her to kill Abigail, and she doesn't. They kill Frank, and Abigail's like, oh, you're not going to be a vampire now because you killed Frank.
Okay. Which that doesn't make sense anymore, though, because if you kill the vampire that turns you, wouldn't that mean that Frank would have turned back to normal after he killed Lambert?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Like,
yeah, yeah. kind of a big plot hole.
A little bit, yeah.
Come to my side, Dave. Come to my side and shit on this movie with me.
I'm not. I enjoyed this movie.
But they do kill. They do kill Frank. Yeah. And you think, okay, well,
movie's over.
Oh yeah, wait a second. I forgot about Lazar.
And in comes Lazar, and he's getting ready to kill Joey. And you know, everyone's like, no, no, she saved my life. She was here when you weren't.
And then he's like, okay, like, leave before I change my mind. It's getting to be dinner time, so, you know, get up out of here.
Yeah. I love how she's walking out, and she just goes, what the fuck?
Yeah, and takes out a lollipop, and then goes.
Yeah.
Which, I will say this, they got that part true.
Yeah.
About sugar.
Yeah.
Somebody who is a former drinker.
Yeah.
The second you cut that out, you would get an immediate sweet tooth.
Yeah.
I don't know. Little thing, that was a little touch that I thought, oh, it was kind of hit close to home. I was like, oh, that does happen.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that is Abigail. And you would think that by listening to me that I hate it. I didn't hate it.
I have a feeling I'm going to rate this way higher than you.
Oh, you definitely are.
I feel like that'd probably be the case for both these movies, because I have them both pretty highly rated.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Because I will say, For both of these, the premise I love. I love the premise of kidnapping a vampire by accident.
Yeah.
To me, though, I just thought it was going to... I thought it was too tame, if you wanted me to be honest. I thought it was going to be way more over the top in terms of, like... I don't know. I just thought it was going to be way more over the top...
Than it was. But yeah, I get what you mean. But I think it's because they wait, like, the first half of the movie to introduce a vampire aspect.
Yeah, and that still is just an issue with me, is that I feel like that was just ruined in the trailer. I feel like you could have definitely done the trailer in a way that didn't spoil that she was a vampire.
Yeah.
And then that would have been a huge twist. If I'd have saw that and not known the twist, I'd have been like, holy crap, okay, movie, okay.
I can imagine you sitting here like, why did Dave give me a...
generic kidnap a little girl.
Why'd you give me a crime movie? This isn't even horror.
Or are they going to like kidnap and then like a monster, like they have to fend themselves off from like a werewolf outside or something like that? Like, yeah, if I did not know, I think I would have probably rated it higher, but I watched the trailer because I wanted to see, all right, did they spoil this in the trailer? And then I watched, I was like, okay, yeah, so that's the list. But then again, would you say that's the movie's fault or the marketing's fault? Probably the marketing, I'd say. Marketing,
yeah.
Because if you didn't know it, that would have been a legitimate, fun twist.
Yeah. Once again, I might be a little biased because I like the directors of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was directed by Radio Silence, same people that did the new Scream and everything like that, so.
You know, I still haven't gone past the three Screams that we watched for
the original trilogy
for Ryan. Ryan Showers.
Yeah,
I haven't seen any of the ones with Jenna Ortega.
Yeah,
maybe that could be something for next season, since
with Jenna Ortega and Melissa Barrera. So
maybe we can compare the three original Scream movies and the newer three. You know what I mean?
On its own, because what was it? The original trilogy, and then it was like 10 years later they put out Scream 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then another 10 years, it was 5 and 6.
Well, maybe we could do the first three and then 5 and 6.
No, 4 is actually a really good movie, so.
All right. Well, that's just some treats for maybe next season.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, but let's break this thing down. And let's just go, because I'm not...
What I found really enjoyable about this movie, we've already said, the premise is awesome, extremely creative. And it's a different type of vampire movie.
Yes.
So that's plus. And plus, I really enjoyed most of the performances in this movie.
The two that I said stuck out for me was Abigail and Frank.
Yeah.
Frank, you could tell he was probably having a lot of fun being the douchebag role.
Yeah. Like, you could kind of see what actors are having fun with the performance they're given. And you could tell Dad Stevens was having a good time on the set.
Yeah, sometimes playing an asshole can just be fun.
Yeah.
And I'll even say that Sammy seemed like she was happy to be there.
Yeah, Catherine Newton was really good. I enjoyed Melissa Barrera's performance.
Lambert, eh.
He was barely in the movie. He has about, 3 to 4 minutes of screen time.
And he basically played it like Gus Fring, just kind of stoic.
Basically, the character he played. It's it's not as over-top as Crystal-like, but still a pretty gory movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's entertaining throughout.
Yeah. Especially when they started exploding. I was like, see, this is the overtop gore that I was thinking was going to be kind of present throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
But, just ridiculous exploding body. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have assumed it was going to be something.
And then, some negatives. Like you said with exposition, I feel like that's like a pacing problem.
Yeah.
Like,
yes,
instead of having all the exposition, one scene here and then there, it's like...
It dumps on you.
Yeah, don't dump it on us. Just spread it out. Because there was enough time in between when they got to the mansion to when Abigail started killing people for us to get natural exposition.
And
I enjoy the scheme, but it's funny, but like you said, it is a lazy way to
give us their backstories.
Yeah.
Because when that happened, I had to pause it for a second. I was like, are you really just basically listing everybody's background?
Yeah.
I'll get into that also in the Talk to Me review.
Yeah.
Because there's a comparison that I'll bring up. But first off, before we move on to the breakdown, did you have a favorite scene?
Let me think. Because there's contenders here. There's a lot of pretty good scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just find myself going back to the funny scenes.
Go ahead.
When Sammy first discovers the driver's head off. Quebec is the first one that comes to her.
Mm-hmm.
And before he was killed, the stoner drew a dick on Quebec's face.
Yeah.
Why is there a dick on your face? He's like, what? Just go get help. Or those are fucking onions.
That tickled you, did it?
That did. I was like, God. Favorite scene would probably be the first one where Abigail's hand explodes.
You know, that was going to be mine, too. It was going to either be that or when Sammy explodes. Because I was like that, because at that point I was like, okay, this is what I'm talking about.
Let's go.
Yeah, so I'll say the same thing, the hand exploding, because I was like, oh, is this where we're going into now? Okay, all right, let's get these exploding body parts going on now.
Yeah, this ain't Twilight, she ain't sparkling because she's in the sun.
Yeah.
That shit explodes.
So, I'll say the same thing.
Show that she's instantly starting to heal.
Like, oh, damn it.
Like, you see that her body's starting to regrow, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll talk about this. This is about to be an hour long just for this one.
Yeah.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and break it down?
All right. Yeah, so I guess our scales are going to be a little bit different here.
Yes, but I still think there was no ill will in terms of I want to win, so I'm going to dock it points. I think I was actually fair in my breakdown.
Yeah, I feel like I'm fair too. It's not like I'm amping one up just to get it. No, it's not like that here. But for technicals, like I said, it's super gory. I enjoyed the effects of this movie. And I felt like it was shot pretty well. So I gave it an 8.4.
Okay. I gave it a 7.5.
7.5?
Yeah, it was competent. It was shot competent. And again, I like the blood explosions. You get a fair amount of blood. I don't know what I would have done differently, but...
Yeah, because like at the end of the movie, Joey leaves the house completely covered in blood.
But, you know, I say 7.5. I think that it was very competently shot. Yeah.
And now for story. I'm going to give it... Like I said, I love the premise.
Yes.
And I just really enjoy the story. And then you pointed out that plot hole, so I took a half point off.
Okay.
So I gave it an 8.1.
Okay.
It was an 8.6, but I'm going to give it an 8.1 for that. But it's easy to follow. It's a fun story. If you go into it looking for a fun, dark horror movie to watch, you're going to have a good time with this movie.
Story for me, I gave it a solid 6.
Solid 6? Okay.
A solid 6. Again, I love the idea of kidnapping a vampire. It's fun. But from a crew not knowing who they're even kidnapping to the 2 exposition dumps to the forced, I'm supposed to feel something for Joey because she's a mother, and the whole, oh, pinky promise. I was like, oh, get the fuck out of my face. And so I had to give it a 6. Still above average.
Yeah.
Still above a 5. But for some reason, those just, I couldn't get over it for some reason.
All right, now, finally, enjoyment. Give your score first here.
Okay, I gave it a 6.8.
6.8, all right.
There were still things that I found funny. Little funny things, like when she is chasing Frank, she jumps on the stair banister and ballets over the fucking, like, banister thing. I thought that was ridiculous, but I thought it was funny. Enjoyed Abigail, enjoyed Frank. The explosions are fun. I didn't hate it, but, you know, so I think 6.8's fair.
Okay. Like I said, I really enjoyed this movie. So I went ahead and gave it an 8.5. Like I said, this is a movie I'm probably going to go back and watch a few times. I mean, you guys can probably tell by the way I've been talking about this movie that I enjoyed it. So, yeah, I gave it 8.5. I think it was the first time we've had pretty different scores for a movie in a while.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's, you know, sometimes just things hit you different, you know. But the thing, I think you and I operate on different scales, too.
Yeah.
You tend to be, if you like something, you give it, like, high, you know, low to mid 8s.
Yeah.
If I like something or I think it's good, I usually hover somewhere around, like, 7 to 7.5. So I just think our scales just happen to be...
A little bit different, yeah.
Our scales just happen to be different. Like, a good thing for you is one thing, a good thing for me is like a whole 2 points lower. I just operate on a lower scale, I think.
Well, I think mine's more of a pendulum, because when I really don't like something, I go the opposite direction as well, so.
I guess on things that are, like, objectively bad, I tend to be a little bit more, like, forgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Abigail, I gave a 25 out of 30. You gave a 20.3 out of 30, so it gets a 22.65 out of 30.
Okay.
All right, now on to Talk to Me.
All right, Talk to Me. That was my pick, not knowing anything about it, and I promise you, Dave, I will be just as critical on this one as I was with the other one. Taking a gamble, though, because A24 and I have already had a complicated history.
This is an A24 film, but I will say, you know, just give it a quick synopsis. Basically, a group of friends discover they could conjure spirits using an embalmed hand, which leads to terrible things happening.
A24 films, just to kind of give you my scale, my top 2 are X and The Witch.
Yeah.
The Witch is A24, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so X and A24... And Excellent. The Witch.
Yeah.
So, though that's my kind of like, I like it. And on the lower end, which I believe Lighthouse is A24.
Lighthouse. And then
Hereditary.
You've come around more on Hereditary than I have.
I wouldn't say I came around on it. I'd just say I don't think I've watched it since the first time I've seen it.
No, we have a review on it. We had a... Who came on it? We talked about it with...
Was that all the way back in season, like, 2?
No, it might have been 3 or 4. We did.
I'll have to go back and rewatch it. But
was it Christopher Frost?
Chris Frost. When he first came on, we did. I have no idea.
Sorry, guys. We're like over 100 episodes in, so sometimes these things do tend to blend together.
Yeah, there's been things where I'm like, oh, we did all that, like, it's season one, right? No, that was season three. Oh, it all feels like so long ago.
I know, it comes at night, we did with Mona Cavani.
Yes.
We talk about...
But anyway, X and The Witcher are kind of my two top ones.
Yeah.
I will say this had a better first 5 minutes than Abigail.
Yeah.
First 5 minutes, we get a holy shit moment. There's this party, and a brother is looking for his other brother. The other brother's name's Duckett, and he's looking for him. Everybody's like, dude, you got to come get your brother. He's freaking out. Finally gets his brother, breaks down a door, and he's like, all right, man, let's get out of here. And they start making their way out, and brother's trying to get rid of all the people, get their phones out of his face. Out of nowhere, his brother just stabs him in the shoulder and then goes outside and stabs himself in the head and dies.
Like, Jesus Christ, yeah. That was like a crazy opening.
I audibly went like, woo, okay, all right, all right, all right. Out of nowhere, just out the gate,
A24. Okay, we talked about Hereditary and Midsommar in April of 2024.
Oh, we talked about Midsommar? I hadn't even watched it.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I was just bullshitting that episode, I guess, because I never watched it.
Well, I don't know if that was the movie we did it, but it was like a... A24 talk. I think we were just talking about A24 in general.
Oh, just in general?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that sounds more right.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, man, I must have been...
Yeah.
Just
Midsommar,
like...
I enjoyed more than Hereditary. But they're both kind of in that same vein where it's like, well shot, but extremely, extreme slow burns, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, that's the thing with A24 is like, you can get some good ones, but then there are a lot of ones where it's just it feels dragging.
Like, one of the few negatives I have about this movie is I felt like the hot open, and then this movie immediately slows down for like the next 30 to 40 minutes.
Damn it, Dave. Why do you gotta be such a negative Nancy? Why can't you just see the good in these movies?
That's like one of the few negative things I'm gonna say about this movie.
I'm kidding. No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it does start off, it's like the beginning of Ghost Ship.
Yeah.
Strong opening, and then you have to go back down to a simmer.
Yeah, well, Ghost Ship just kind of starts hot and then just turns off the stove.
Yeah, this one at least kind of kept you wanting to...
Yeah.
I think we can all admit, as great as Ghost Ship's beginning is, the rest of the movie is just... Whoosh.
Terrible.
It could have been The Shining on the sea, but alas.
At least it has a great opening that keeps people talking about it.
Yeah.
I think it did one thing right then.
We fast forward sometime in the future, and we get introduced to our three other characters. We got Mia, Jade, and Riley.
Yeah.
Mia and Jade are very good friends, probably best friends. Riley is Jade's brother.
Yeah. And Mia kind of stays with them at times because her mom died a few years ago, and her relationship with her dad isn't great.
So she goes to her best friend and kind of like a second family. I think we've all had that family growing up where it's like, you even go in and you go, hey, mom. And it's like, you know, playfully. Exactly, it's like, yeah. So.
But I do like what the directors did here and like the way they chose to film the two situations. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're the first time directors, but it just the way it's like when Mia's at her house with her dad, everything's a little bit more meager, darker.
Darkly shot.
Down. Yeah, dulled down. And then when she's with, you know, Jade's house, the shots are usually brighter than they were before.
You know, I didn't think about it until you just mentioned that. That's a pretty good catch, Dave.
Yeah.
Just my score for a second.
Yeah.
All right.
This is a very close race between these two movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Riley can eat a dick real quick, because he's always constantly threatening to tattle on his sister.
He's your stereotypical little brother.
Stereotypical little brother. I think he's like 15.
No, I think, what is it? Mia and Jade are like 17, and he's supposed to be 14?
He's like 14, 15, something like that.
Because I think one line to the movie is, like, he's not even 15 years old yet.
Yeah. I know that line. I thought they said he's just 15. But let's say he's 14 and a half.
So basically, they're seniors in high school. He's a freshman.
And, you know, they're trying, like, two or three instances where he threatens to, like, snitch on his sister to mom. But whatever. They're going to go to this party. And the only reason he's coming is shock. He says, if you don't take me, I'm going to tell Mom.
Yeah.
It's fine, Riley. Fucking just get in. So they get to this party, and it's time for some party games. Time to strap down a person and bring out a severed hand.
Yeah.
And this severed hand business, apparently these group of friends that they went to go meet, they've been doing this kind of thing for a little bit, where they go to the party, they bust out this hand. You're supposed to grab the severed hand and say, talk to me. And then automatically a ghost just pops up right in front of you.
And you say, I let you in, and you get possessed. And so, I think this was another, like, good choice, director's choice here. Instead of being like, oh, look at this viral video. It's like these videos have already been, like, circulating with throughout their friend group.
Yeah, I like that it was just kind of normal now.
Yeah, it's just, like, kind of normal, like, oh, see, this is going to be at the party tonight. Yeah, that's why I want to go.
Which I get, in an A24 world, you can totally imagine this happening, where yeah. It's just like, oh, they're kind of like viral people now. People want to come and get possessed by the severed hand. So, Dave, you see this. How much?
How much?
How much is going to take for you to grab this hand?
Oh, God.
Like, if you... So, you see, the first person does it, sees a ghost, gets possessed, and then the whole, like, gimmick of the thing is it possesses you for 90 seconds, says spooky shit.
Yeah, you have to, you know, let go of the hand taken away from you and shut the door on the dead 90 seconds. Otherwise, it's like an invitation for the spirit to stay with you.
You might as well have seen the smile monster. Like, yeah. Now you're going to get pretty much haunted.
I'm not doing it, man. Not doing it.
What if I promise to only let you in for like 60 seconds, and then I cut it off?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
All right. Because I said, yo, fuck this. Call me a pussy.
Yeah,
this isn't one of those, oh, I'm a skeptic thing. I'm literally watching people get possessed, and they've all done it, so they all know this isn't bullshit either.
Yeah,
like they grab the hand.
Like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. You know what? I'll hold it. I'll be the timer guy, but I'm not gonna. So Mia. But,
yeah, this Mia. Once she gets to the party, it kind of gets awkward because she's kind of been like, you know, the awkward, quiet girl at school since her mom died.
Yeah, they say that she's too clingy to her friend Jade.
Yeah, and they're like, why would you bring her? Yeah. But, you know, she kind of senses that too, but she volunteers.
Yeah, doesn't want to be a party pooper.
Yeah, she's...
So she gets possessed, and I guess getting possessed by ghosts must be better than sex, because people love it.
Also, and this, what happened is she gets so caught in the possession that they don't get it. They don't shut the door in time. They tell her, like, yeah, we went a little over the 90 seconds.
Just a little bit.
You should be fine.
Yeah, walk it off. Yeah, afterwards, Riley... Nobody dies.
Nope.
Everything's fine. Yeah, it was a good night. Good party. Riley, Mia, and Jade go back to Jade's house for the night.
But
and
also, it should be mentioned, while she was possessed, she looked right at Riley and said, I like you, and I want you. Which kind of tells us what the motives of the spirits are.
I like you, and I want you.
Yeah, they want to get Riley.
But when they go back to Jade's mom or Jade's place, we get a little backstory on Mia's mom. Now, this is what I wanted to bring up as opposed to Abigail. We get some exposition. We find out that Mia's mom died because she accidentally took an extra sleeping pill, and she basically accidentally killed herself.
Yeah. Or so Mia thinks. It's unclear to her whether it was, you know, suicide or an accident.
She's never known, and she's always kind of harbored this resentment of some, you know, as you would do if somebody died in a certain way like that.
Yeah, I think she might, like, kind of sort of know, like, subconsciously that it was suicide, but
the
whole accident story is kind of like the thing she clings on to because she doesn't want to believe her mom would leave her. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easier to believe that she accidentally overdosed rather than killed herself. Yeah. So, now, this is a conversation that takes place between Mia and Riley at like 2 a.m. Everybody's like asleep. No, these two can't sleep.
Like there was a thunderstorm. Riley tries to go into his sister's room. She's like, no, dude, you're like 14. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And Riley and Mia, she might as well be another older sister to him. You could tell that she's been friends with Jade and the family for a long time.
Yeah.
They're basically family.
Yeah.
And this is where we get that exposition. So much different than Abigail, where they had to stop the movie and say, You're in the military. You used to be an ex-cop. You are a trust fund baby. This is a conversation that had a natural, we got the exposition of the mom story, and it was between two characters, more intimate. It was between two characters at night.
Yeah.
That's what I just used to back up my argument for that whole exposition stuff in Abigail. Anyway.
Yeah, a very different way, as in, yeah, it was pretty well executed here.
Yeah, it was just a nice little intimate moment between essentially a older sister and younger brother type bond.
Yeah.
So now, you know, that party was so good, now Mia wants to throw one over at her place. And I love her mother, who could just sense that there's a party in the works. She tries to grill everybody, like, so, tell me, what time does the party start? What party, Mom? Okay, just checking. Or what about you? You know, you can tell me. I know there's a party going on. What time is that at? I don't know what you're talking about, Mom. But there's a party, and it's at 10 o'clock. And the same people come over, and we get a little montage of everybody, you know, taking turns, except Riley, because he's the youngest. Everybody's taking turns on the hand. And a new fear unlocked for me, Dave.
Yeah.
And my new fear is that a spirit takes over my body, makes out with my dog, and then jacks off in front of everybody.
Right.
Because that's what happens. We meet Jade's boyfriend, who's also at this party, and
like, that's why they had the people with the hand come over, because Jade's boyfriend wanted to try it.
Yeah, and I don't think it was at all the experience he wanted it to be.
No.
He gets possessed. That ghost made him make out with the dog. Dry humped the floor. Basically, he was rubbing up on his groin. It was a horny ghost that took over him.
Basically, yeah.
I guess it's just luck of the draw, because it's never the same ghost twice. Or not usually. It's usually different ghosts at different time. And he just got the weird, horny, make out with the dog ghost.
Yeah, basically, that's the thing. It's like, you don't know who you're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you kind of get like the spirit that's kind of now attached to Mia.
Yes.
We quite realize it, but this spirit's kind of guiding her now, acting as her dead mother, yeah.
Yes. Mia's, you know, seeing things, and now
through all this, the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah, when all this fun festivities, Riley is begging for a turn.
Yeah, I think he's just trying to show that, you know, trying to like, yeah, I'm not such a little kid, you know, Riley has his friend there.
I can totally get that.
And they're not peer pressuring, but I think in that situation, he kind of feels pressure, like, yeah, I got to step up and do this, yeah.
Yeah, they're not calling him a wuss or anything like that, but by the tone in the air, you could just kind of hear, like, they still see me as a little kid kind of thing. And Jay's like, hell no, I'm not letting you do this. Guys, this is all fun and everything, but I'm not letting my 14-year-old brother get possessed. He can watch, but he's not going to
do this.
And she leaves the room, And he goes to Mia, and he's like, you know, putting on a pouty face. And she's like, okay, 50 seconds.
Yeah.
You can do it for 50 seconds. Oh, you're just inviting trouble.
Yeah. But what happens is the spirit that possesses him, Mia thinks is her mom. And she doesn't let people break the connection.
She's like, please, let me just talk. It's my mom.
So it's like, he's connected not past the 90 seconds to about 2 minutes until this spirit possessing his body starts bashing his face against the table.
Yeah, you just see this kid.
Out his own eye.
So that was
against the wall. Yeah,
that was graphic because him about to rip out his own eye.
Oh, so uncomfortable. Yeah,
about to rip out his own eye, and then you know, this is kind of also what happened in Hereditary. Yeah. Basically, broke his face by slamming it. If you're an outsider looking in, it just looks like this kid went crazy and is just mutilating himself. Yeah. Starts bashing his face into the whatever's in front of him.
Yeah.
And I guess in that 2 minutes, Jade heard the commotion from the other room.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what's happening?
Her brother. Oh, yeah.
And he looks like he was about to do the finishing blow, but she managed to put her hand out in time.
Yeah.
Keep him from completely killing himself. But now, party's over. Riley's all banged up. Mom and Jade are pissed at Mia.
Yeah.
Because I guess Mia's the friend, but she also, I guess, has kind of like a rebellious streak that the mom knows about, like, you know.
So the mom, mom is a parent, doesn't really know what her kids are into, so she just assumes that Mia gave Riley some drugs.
Yeah. Just gave him, nobody got arrested because everybody had their phones out, and it just looks like the kid went crazy.
Yeah.
Understandably, mom and Jade are pissed because
Jade knows what's going on. Jade's like, you let him do this. Yeah.
Yeah, you let him do this, even though I told you no.
Yeah, because Jade is the only one in the group who doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm. And she has no real interest in doing it.
Yeah.
Mia, like, Mom's already pissed because we said, hey, no parties.
Yeah.
And then on top of non-parties, I'm sure on the top of that list is, yeah, and make sure your brother doesn't beat his face in.
Yeah.
And end up in the emergency room. And the bad decisions keep coming because Mia wants to go home, but she doesn't want to be alone.
Yeah.
So she invites, of all people, Jade's boyfriend to come and spend the night over with her because she wants to not be alone. Under the whole guise of like, well, we're friends. And I'm sure it's cool that you stay the night over at my house. I know you're Jade's boyfriend, but we're just friends.
And it's made very clear that he's like a good guy. Like him and Jade haven't even like slept together or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they say like waiting till marriage, but just in general, he's supposed to be like considered like a good person. Yeah.
Yeah, he's faithful and stuff, but I think that a more faithful boyfriend would have been like, you're her best friend, I can't be spending the night over at your house by alone, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so they kind of almost have a moment, he pulls away, and then they go to bed.
They go to bed, and...
Yeah, and then it gets weird.
Yeah, what a way to wake up.
Because Mia sees, like, the spirit in the room, and the spirit is sucking on his toe.
Yeah, and sucking on his toes, yeah.
For him to wake up and to, you know, spirit to go away. And then realized it was Mia that was sucking on his toe. She got possessed, yeah.
She was possessed. There was kind of like a Tyler Durden situation where she was seeing it from the outside.
Yeah.
Something happening, but it was actually her doing it.
Yeah.
Friggin' Daniel wakes up and basically his whole foot is in her mouth.
Yeah, and he's just freaked the fuck out. So he leaves.
That is a very weird way to wake up.
Yeah.
So after that happens, Mia is like freaking out, and then she gets another vision of her mother saying, Riley needs help.
Yeah.
So we cut to Riley, who, man, he looks rough.
Yeah. And his sister is like watching him at, you know, just giving him like a sponge bath. And for a minute, he goes from comatose to awake and bites her. Mm-hmm. Tapped on the ground, starts bashing his head into the wall again.
Right before that, the mom left the room.
Yeah.
And I'm like, of course this is going to happen when the mom leaves the room. And right. she's gonna come back in and he's bashing his head again. It's like, what? I keep leaving it. Like, what are you guys doing to this poor kid?
So that happens. And, you know, Jade's just trying to figure out ways to help her brother, which leads to the group all getting together again. And they're like, dude, where'd you guys get this hand from? Where the fuck did you guys get it?
Got it from this guy named Duckett's.
He said he no longer needed a hand to see the spirits.
Yeah, Duckett's was the guy at the very beginning who we saw kill his brother, or tried to kill his brother and then killed himself.
Yeah. So it ties back around. They find his brother, and his brother just doesn't want to deal with them. The people that had the hand, I think, was Haley and Foss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's like, you guys acted like to be his friend, but the minute this wasn't fun anymore, you just abandoned him. So he's pissed off at them, and Jade and, you know, Mia, you know, talk to him, or, like, try to convince him to help, and he basically tells them, like, hey, he gives them, like, the blueprint on how to save their brother. It's just, like, the longer they're in this body, they're gonna get weaker, and they're gonna go away.
Mm-hmm.
So he's fine, you don't have to do anything. But there's a spirit that's kind of guiding Mia on what she's deciding, and she's like, oh, no, we never closed the door when, you know, all that happened. We never blew out the candle.
So maybe if we do the ritual again,
yeah,
and then blow out the candle, maybe that'll, like, release the hold on, you know, it's worth a try, I guess. I wouldn't have had any other suggestions.
No, but they try it, and then she's like, you know what, maybe I could do it, and they could show me where he's at, where his spirit's at, yeah.
Let me grab the hand, say, talk to me. And then maybe I can talk to a spirit and maybe I can find out something.
Yeah, and it shows that Riley is being just absolutely tortured in this other dimension by all the other spirits. And Mia's like, we have to save him, we have to find a way to get him back. And this is at the part of the movie where you realize that Mia's grip on reality is fading.
Yeah, she keeps seeing things that aren't there. She keeps seeing her mom, the other ghost lady, the, you remember, the whole toes situation. She can't correctly and reliably discern reality right now.
Yeah. But she gets home and her dad's there. He's like, hey, I'm about to add some more onto your plate. Here's the note your mother left after she killed herself.
Yeah, I know you thought I was hiding something about your mom and her death this whole time, but yeah, I did. Here's a letter. Basically, it was a suicide note.
Yeah. And then you got the spirit telling her, no, I didn't kill myself.
He's lying. Yeah, he's lying or he's wrong. Monster. Yeah, he's a... That's not really your father. That's one of the ghost creatures.
And then you got her father start trying to break down her door. And then just kind of show you that that's not really happening. You get a shot of just her dad sitting on the couch.
Yeah. In reality, when all that's going on, dad's just sitting on the couch minding his own business. Yeah. This whole conversation didn't happen or anything like that.
Yeah.
Father, but in her head, her dad just broke down the door and is trying to strangle her.
Yeah, she starts screaming, you know, leave me alone, get off me. So her dad rushes into the room.
Real dad.
And tries to shake her out of it. She grabs a pair of scissors on the floor and stabs him in the neck.
Uh-huh.
And then she kind of snaps back into reality and kind of sees that.
Yeah.
But the spirit tells her something that kind of goes back to the beginning of the movie. Because in the beginning, Mia and Riley are riding in the car and there's a kangaroo in the middle of the road. Basically dead. And Riley tells her, like, you got to put him out of his misery at least. But she can't do it. And now the spirit is in her ear saying, hey, you have to save Riley by putting him out of his misery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take care of him here.
Yeah, and all the while, as the movie keeps going along, this vision of her mother keeps getting more and more demonic looking.
Yeah.
So, like, we see that this is a untrustworthy creature, but she sees her mother.
Yeah. So Mia calls Jade and tells Jade, hey, I know how to save your brother. Come to my house. To get Jade to leave the hospital so she could go in there. She goes in there, but the mom's there. And they have a little bit of a heart-to-heart where the mom's like, I'm sorry I blamed you. I shouldn't have.
This poor mother.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, it's okay. You know, we're family. I love you too. But can I get a moment alone with Riley?
She's like, of course.
Yeah, she leaves. And the mother gets a call from Jade. She's like, hey, you know, Mia's dad's here with scissors in his neck. I called the ambulance, but, you know, she's dangerous. Don't leave her around Riley.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't leave her alone with Riley.
He's alone in the room with...
Oh, no, he's alone with Riley.
And mom goes back in there, room's empty. She's like, where's my son? And then you see Mia with a wheelchair pushing Riley along.
Yeah, she's fast.
Yeah, and then Jade gets to the hospital and she's chasing her across the parking lot. Cause Mia's pushing, going through a fence now, pushing him in a wheelchair down towards this busy main road. And then you got a shot of Jade running towards him. Next thing you know, you got a shot from inside one of the cars, just driving along. It's kind of, you don't really see what happens. You just hear a thud,
mm-hmm.
and they swerve off to the side of the road, a little bit of a traffic incident. And you're like, oh, shit, you know, she did it. And then you see that she's the one on the side of the road.
She jumped in the road.
Yeah.
And
also, it was at that point, like, the last scene you see of her and Riley, she kind of freezes because this, you know, the spirit that's talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of coaching her to do it. She's like, yeah, push him, and then we'll have him.
Yeah.
And you kind of see Mia freeze and kind of like, oh, I shouldn't do this type deal.
What am I doing?
Yeah, and then, so, I think that kind of, that point right there kind of leaves her interpretation of, like, did she stop and kill herself, or did she stop, decide not to do it, and then get pushed into the road by Jade?
That's what I thought. I thought that Jade, like, pushed her into the road.
Where, you know, she didn't have to, but she didn't know she didn't have to at that point, yeah.
Yeah.
And but then you get the ending scene of the movie where Mia wakes up, she's back in the hospital, she sees her dad leaving, and she's like, Dad, wait up, and he doesn't respond, and then she sees Riley, now all back, good health, leaving with Jade and his mom, and just the lights start shutting down on her.
And she just gets enveloped in darkness.
Yeah. Next thing you know, she sees a candlelight. And then she goes over there. There's a hand sticking out. And you hear someone say, talk to me. She grabs it. You see a different party. I think they're speaking Spanish, maybe? Because they said there was another hand somewhere else in the world. Yeah.
I think it was Greek.
Yeah. And it says, let me in. Dude gets possessed. That's the end of the movie.
That was a kick-ass ending.
Yeah.
That last 2 minutes was awesome. So she is now a ghost to be used at party favors.
Yeah.
All right, so...
First off, was this your first time seeing this?
It was, yeah.
Okay, overall thoughts?
Overall, I think for a directorial debut, this was a very good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think because the directors of this movie were YouTubers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were YouTubers in Australia.
Oh yeah, it does take place in Australia.
And then they got like a budget to make this movie and they made this. So I gotta say, that hats off to them.
Yeah, it was right at home at A24.
Yeah, this is definitely like an A24 film.
That's the thing with A24s, is that they'll have long things of not really much happening, and then whatever does happen, it's really abrupt.
Yeah.
It's like, it wakes you up.
Yeah. That's almost all the movies, yeah.
Do you have a scene?
A scene. I want to say the, like, entire opening scene,
mm-hmm.
because it's, like, it's a tracking shot of, like, the brother entering the house looking for his brother.
No cuts.
No cuts, just a tracking shot through the entire... It gives you a sense of, like, immersion into this party.
Yeah, I thought it was a really cool opening shot, too.
Yeah.
I noticed that right off the... A24 usually has good cinematography.
Yeah. And plus, the brother made a smart decision in the opening spot. Like, he's knocking for his brother and no one answers.
Mm-hmm.
So he just knocks down the door.
He just busts down this guy's door, and he's like, dude! I'm gonna say my scene is when Riley beats the crap out of his own face.
That is a great scene as well, yeah.
That's and then when you see the aftermath, I mean, it's all prosthetics, but you see that he's about to rip his eye. I was like, oh my god! Yeah, so it's.
What did you give it for technicals?
I gave it 7.7.
7.7.
Yeah, really cool shots. Like I said, A24 usually, if I don't like the movie of an A24 project, I'll usually at least like the cinematography.
Yeah, they're always really good with cinematography. I gave it an 8.2.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty well done. Yeah. That goes into story.
Story, I gave a 7.
You gave it a 7?
Yeah, love the idea that this is a hand that possesses people, and the teens are weirdly just okay with it. Yeah. This is just a party favor.
Yeah, like, this is a fun take on, like, a possession movie.
Yeah, willing participants.
Yeah. Yeah, I gave it an 8 for story.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said... You know, it's a possession movie at its basis, but they did a really creative way of doing it. So, yeah, I gave it an 8.
Okay. And enjoyment, I gave a 7.
Enjoyment, you gave a 7?
Yeah. It's, like I said, like, when stuff gets into the 7s, that means generally I like it. I don't think this is one, though. A24 movies are never ones that I go out of my way to watch multiple times. Usually with A24, I watch them once, and I'm pretty much good. Maybe I'll watch it after a year. This is kind of like that, you know. I enjoyed that I watched it, but I'm not gonna go rushing to go watch it again.
I gave it an 8. Like I said, it's an enjoyable movie. I had a lot of fun watching it. Yeah. Like I said, I probably wouldn't rush watch it again, but I could put it in a rotation every couple years.
Yeah, it's up there. Like if The Witch and X aren't around and I can't watch it, I'd put it on if I'm in the mood for an A24 movie.
Yeah, so I gave a 24.2 out of 30. You gave it a 21.7. So the average score of 22.95.
What was Abigail?
22.65.
Holy, it was close.
Yeah. So this one goes to you.
Oh, does that mean I won the whole thing?
Yeah, you're up 3-1. Even if I win the next one, it'll be 3-2. But yeah.
Well, let's. So that means I have creative control next season?
Yeah. I mean, we're probably going to do the next verses anyways, but...
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, well, let's put some... Let's make it interesting, since the stakes of next season are now... It's going to be me.
Yeah.
Why don't we either do this next one for money, or the next one, whoever wins the next one, can determine our very first movie that we review next season?
Okay, let's do it for the first movie review next season.
All right, so I have creative control next season, but whoever wins this next one will get us kicked off with our very first review.
Yeah, and our next topic is Shyamalan. M. Night.
Damn, I forgot that Shyamalan was in the rotation.
Yeah.
All right, and I imagine... Okay, so... All right, you can go ahead and... I gotta think. Actually, I don't need to think.
See, I'm not gonna do Signs or Sixth Sense. I'm not gonna go straight for the top for his, so...
Well, I was going to ask, are we leaving Knock at the Cabin as well, since we already reviewed it?
Yeah, since that was already reviewed, we're going to leave that one out, too.
I have one that I kind of want to talk about, but it's been a while since I've seen it.
You know what?
Hmm.
I'm gonna take a chance here. All right. Haven't seen this movie, and I'm definitely taking a chance.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take The Watchers, directed by his daughter.
Oh, she is a Shyamalan, ain't she?
Yeah.
All right. Since you're gonna take a gamble on that, I'll take a gamble on this one, and I'm gonna say the movie Devil.
Devil. Oh, movie.
Now, I haven't seen it in years. I haven't seen it
in probably like when it came out 2010. So. Probably
and I about- can. And I can already remember some of the criticisms of it, which yeah. there are certain scenes where it's like, all right, that's just dumb.
Yeah, but our last verses will be The Watchers versus Devil. All right, I want to thank you guys for listening. Have a good week, everybody.
Peace.